Welcome to the America's Quarterly Podcast. I'm Brian Winter. Chile is on the verge of a new era. What do the leading candidates in November's presidential election tell us about where the country is headed?
Both candidates represent sort of a shift in Chilean politics. They are both young. They both appeal sort of to the new issues that have emerged in the debate in Chile. They also represent sort of a shift from traditional political parties.
Chile has been through a lot over the last 2 years. Massive protests, a pandemic, a convention to write a new constitution that is still underway, all of it putting the future of the country very much up in the air. Now focus has turned to the presidential elections, which will be held on November 21st, where after recent primaries, the field has really taken shape. And let me tell you, I think this is a fascinating race, with several young candidates who, perhaps appropriately, mark a generational change in Chilean politics, talking about new issues, and this may foreshadow similar shifts elsewhere in Latin America. So who are the front runners in this election? How dramatic is change in Chile likely to be? And what's the latest on this process of writing a new constitution? Joining us to discuss this today, my friend Isabel Aninat. Isabel is the Dean of the Law School at Universidad Adolfo Ibáñez and Director of the Chilean Society of Public Policy. She has worked as a presidential advisor on issues like human rights and labor legislation, and she was also part of the Technical Commission for Constitutional Reform. Isabel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, just a quick note for regular listeners, my voice is still a little bit ragged. I've been fighting off a bug over the last few weeks. This is part of being out in the world again. You know, thankfully, it's not COVID, but we're catching all these things that we were protected from during that time when we were relatively isolated. But, you know, Isabel, let's get right down to it. Chile is a country that has been, through so much. Talk to us about the overall feeling in the country right now. Because, you know, the economy is looking up a little bit. It's a country that's done well on the vaccination front. Their deaths from COVID today are at their lowest since May 2020. Does it feel like a country where things are starting to return back to normal?
Well, the COVID situation, it's much better now. So let's put that aside. It's obviously not done, but numbers are very good and life is more, let's say, normal, but we'll see how it progresses. We are starting springtime here, so the weather is better, and so we can do activities outside. Classes are returning to schools, to high schools, universities as well. But the political front is still very, very, I would say, liquid. We have had the primaries, right, a few weeks ago. And so now what we're facing is the upcoming presidential and Congress election, which will be in mid-November. And so there is still much going on that front. The candidates were registered a few days ago, and there's still much issues to be solved because of registration problems at our electoral commission. And so we will see a lot of definitions over the coming days. So I would say there's much going on. The news are moving very fast, but nothing, it's very settled still.
All right, so let's talk about the field. There are a great many candidates, but it really seems to most observers like there are three lanes, potentially, for, you know, amongst the candidates who really have a chance. And those lanes are on the left, the center left, perhaps, and then the center right. Let's talk first about the candidate who emerged from this primary process on the left. This is Gabriel Boric. He was somewhat of a surprise winner, at least to me, because the assumption was that Daniel Jadue, who is a member of the Communist Party, he's a mayor there in Santiago, he was leading a lot of the national polls for president, but he did not win his primary. What came out instead was Gabriel, who is younger, and I think safe to say more moderate as well. He's a voice who clearly, you know, a person of the left, but has also spoken about fiscal responsibility, has also been critical of the dictatorships in Venezuela, Nicaragua, and elsewhere. What's your sort of take on him? What are the challenges that he faces within his own coalition? And how, we all know that the constitutional convention that came out of this election earlier this year is a left-leaning body. Does that mean that Gabriel Boric is right now considered the favorite to be the next president?
Well, the latest polls show that he's in a very good position. I mean, right now he has around 23% of the vote in terms of the current scenario for the first round, but he's very competitive. So he's competitive with the center-left candidate, and he's competitive also with the center-right candidate. But I would say again that it's very liquid because this scenario sort of changes week after week. But I would say that after the primaries, he has been in a very, very good position for the general election. But I would say that his greatest challenge is how he will manage the tensions within the left. So as you mentioned, he won the primaries against the Communist Party candidate, Jadwe. And so now they have a joint candidate list for Congress, right? So what we have seen over the last few days is how this alliance between Frente Amplio, which is where Gabriel Boric comes from, and the Communist Party will work in terms of support, but also of the issues. So just to give you an example, one of the issues that has been very important since last year, but also in the last few weeks, has been the withdrawal of the pension funds. And if we will have a fourth withdrawal of the pension funds.
And just to, sorry to interrupt you there, but just for our audience who doesn't follow Chile on a week-to-week basis, one of the economic measures that the government has used during the pandemic to provide people with emergency funds is these withdrawals from the private pension fund system, which itself has been kind of this political dynamite throughout the whole constitutional process over the last 2 years. And there have already been three of these quote-unquote emergency withdrawals, and now there's discussion around a fourth. So he's been taking a position on that.
He had a clear position. He has changed his position. Now he's in favor. He was against the fourth withdrawal. He's in favor now. So we will see sort of how these tensions within his own sector, he manages those tensions. But I would say he has been very effective, and he was over the primaries, with putting new issues on the agenda. So, for example, all of his campaign during the primary election was based on him being from Magallanes, a southern region, on issues regarding gender, diversity, the indigenous peoples, all sorts of issues that have become very, very important in Chilean politics, much more than they were over the last few years, particularly because they have become extremely relevant in the Constitutional Convention. So he has been very in tune with putting those new issues in place. But what we will see, I think, over the now with the electoral period is, for example, who is working with him? What role will the Communist Party have? Especially because within the Constitutional Convention, the Frente Amplio or the left has been sort of not aligned with the Communist Party. They even have many divided votes. So you see, on one front, there's an alliance. On the other front, that alliance is not working. And so what role he will have in this political spectrum, it's going to be seen over the last few months, actually.
Well, and this was my next question, because I think the biggest question that many observers, from investors to others, have about Chile is, will the Chile that comes out of this whole process of the new, you know, the new constitution, these presidential elections, will it be fundamentally different in its management of the macro economy, right? This country that has been, you know, so successful in so many ways over the last 30 years with all the shortcomings that the Chilean model had. It was the economy that grew the fastest. It was the one that that reduced poverty the most, had good social indicators as well, had major shortcomings in terms of inequality and social services and so on. Everybody's familiar with the story. The question all along, though, has been, like, are we going to get something that is radically different? Now, the interpretation was that when Hadwe, who was seen as kind of the true radical, when he lost and Boric won, that the odds of a truly radical transformation were diminished. But what do we know about where Boric is in terms of like this fundamental question of macroeconomic management?
Well, it's all relative. I would say that yes, the Communist Party candidate was much more extreme than Boric's position. But I would say that because we have not yet started the substantive issues of the campaign, we will see much more details on that. Some issues have been put on the debate. Well, he participated obviously on the debates in the primaries. But we will see, for example, what happens with the fourth withdrawal. That will be a very important sign. He is currently a member of parliament, right? So he has to vote. But also we will see more definitions, for example, regarding some issues that are in the constitutional convention being that will be discussed in the coming months, right? Property rights, for just to put an example. The autonomy of the central bank, which will also be part of the constitutional debate, right? And so these issues, there have been some definitions that have been put in place. And I would say that one issue that has appeared with great preoccupation over the last few weeks has been the rising inflation. Chile has a very bad history with inflation, not over the last few decades, but a historically big issue with a rising inflation. And what we have seen over the last few months is continuous rise of inflation. Part of this has to do with the withdrawals of the pension funds and with all the different aids that the government has put in place for the economic situation. But you see that the presentations from the president of the central bank have been very, very explicit on the scenario that we face. So I would say that it will be important to follow his position over the coming weeks to see where he stands on these issues with greater detail than what we saw over the primaries, because primary debates are much more general here.
So moving on, Isabel, to another candidate, the kind of the standard bearer of the center right or right is this figure, Sebastián Sichel. He's young, he's 44, which is a year older than I am, so maybe it's a little self-serving of me to call that young. But look, in presidential terms, that's quite young. And, you know, he's an interesting figure because he was a minister under Sebastián Piñera, but he is also perhaps understandably gone to great length to take distance from the current president, who's, of course, still very unpopular. And he has also been critical of the elite at large. He has said things like, we have an elite that is in charge, but knows very little about what happens in Chile. He also has a compelling personal story. He grew up in a household with drug addiction and alcoholism, won a scholarship to study at one of Chile's most prestigious law schools. So this is not, you know, just as I think it's clear that Boric represents kind of a generational break on the Chilean left, it seems that Sichel represents something different on the Chilean right as well. Who is supporting him right now? And, you know, how do you think he's different from what we've usually seen over the years in terms of candidates on the Chilean right?
Well, first, I think both candidates represent sort of a shift in Chilean politics. They are both young. They both appeal sort of to the new issues that have emerged in the debate in Chile. I mentioned before gender, but also issues regarding, for example, young entrepreneurs, a different type of economic approach. Also issues that have to do with environment are very, very important in Chile, not only regarding water, but also climate change. So those sort of issues are very in tune with both candidates, obviously with different approaches, but they also represent sort of a shift from traditional political parties. This was very important because over the elections for the convention that we held in mid-May, we saw huge success from independent candidates, where they fully ran as independents or independents within party lists, and they sort of both tend to speak about themselves being independent or coming from different origins. So I would say that both sort of situate in that scenario. Sichel represents a center-right that is, I would say, more liberal than the traditional Chilean right-wing politics, right? So he won against Lavín, just as Boric won against Jadwe, came from the Communist Party, which is a very traditional party in Chile. Sichel won against what was supposed to be the most competitive candidate, Joaquín Lavín, also a mayor in Santiago, who sort of represented the traditional right. Lavín had been candidate for president a while ago, and he has been in politics for many decades. And so part of Sichel's position is sort of, again, appealing to the new issues and sort of managing his relationship with the traditional right. And I would say, just as Sichel, he will have to deal with the tension within the sort of more liberal or progressive center right and the more traditional right, especially because in the case of Sichel, there's another candidate, which is José Antonio Kast. He comes from the right, that will tension his sector. How much should Sichel move to the center, or how much should he move to the traditional right-wing issues?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that sort of far-right candidate, José Antonio Kast. He has some support in polls, but so far doesn't look like he's part of this top tier of candidates. So before we kind of move on to talking about the Constitution, I do want to ask about this. I mentioned that there was kind of a center-left space. Yasna Provoste is 51. She's a senator from the Christian Democrat Party. Is there room for another candidate, do you think, in this race? Or do you think it really is going to be a race between Sichel and Boric when it's all said and done?
Well, Yasna Provoste, I would say, it's in a more difficult position because she has been around in politics for a long time. She resigned from the presidency from the Senate. And so she has to occupy this space within the center that Sichel wants to move to from the center right, but also because part of the center left sees a great appeal in Gabriel Boric. So Yasna Provoste has to appeal to the center in order to gain space from Sichel, but also has to re-engage the voters from the center left, which are looking to move towards the left. And just as I mentioned before, that both Boric and Sichel appeal to this idea of independent candidates, new issues, and sort of a younger generations, I would say Yasna Provoste will have a bigger challenge here because she comes from the Christian Democrats. She has been in politics for a long time. And so we will see how she moves in this complicated arena. In the polls, she's running in third place. But as I would mention again, everything is very liquid, particularly because the electoral period has not formally started, but also because I think it's important that we mention that the turnout is very uncertain. We had one of our highest turnouts in the last October referendum, and by highest I mean 51%, but also for the constitutional convention, participation went down to 43%. And so how many people will vote in November? It's the biggest question.
Well, and the other big consideration is, you know, what will the mood of the country be, right? This is a question from our producer, Brendan O'Boyle. It's a really good question. He says, you know, the electoral campaign is happening as the economy is recovering. There has been a successful vaccine campaign. The economy expanded 1% in the second quarter compared to the first, 18% in the second quarter compared to a year ago. There's been a consumption boom, in part due to these pension withdrawals. I mean, we had all kind of assumed that this would be a really strong anti-system vote. Is the mood going to be more normal than we might have expected? And if so, who do you think that benefits?
Well, it has to do with COVID, of course. But it also has to do with the Constitutional Convention. The Constitutional Convention has been in place for the last 2 months. This was, let's remember, a body that did not have rules of procedure set in place. And different issues have been on the agenda with a lot of force, particularly regarding indigenous peoples, gender, identity politics in general. That sort of debates have been put on the agenda. And so I would say that it will be very interesting to watch how the electoral debate, right, especially between Sichel, Provoste, and Boric, plays with the parallel process that is going on, which is the convention. This was not planned as this. The convention had to start functioning last year because of COVID. Everything had to be moved. And now we had this parallel process that will take place. And what will be very interesting is to see how the results of the mid-November election play within the convention. Not only the presidential results, but also the Congress results. Let's imagine that, for example, the right has a big electoral win. Well, what does that mean for the convention? Those debates will fully start after the results from the November election.
There is so much up in the air right now. And you've also, you know, you've talked about so many issues as well. From you talked about gender issues and the environment that make clear that there is a generational shift that's happening right now. Help me out here just to, as we kind of move toward the end here and try to come with some takeaways from all of this. What does it seem like the most important issue for Chilean voters will be by the time we get to November? I mean, is it the pandemic? Is it still some of the issues that brought people into the streets back in October 2019, like inequality, the cost of healthcare and education, you know, the state's ability to provide good services at a reasonable cost? I mean, out of this huge universe of issues that we're talking about, what do you think will really define this election?
Oh, there are so many issues going on. I think one big issue will be the pension system in general. With the withdrawal of the pension funds, there's much that has to do with the role of the state, what will happen with the whole system for the future. I think that will be a big one. The economy, of course, will be present. Gabriel Boric, for example, has put forward proposals for having workers participating in the board of directors of companies. And so the economy will probably have new issues regarding the economic design. There are two other issues that have the most attention. One is social rights. Social rights, it's a way of grouping a lot of what you mentioned, right, that we saw in October. Health, pensions, obviously, education. And so there's a lot of demands for the guaranteeing of social rights. And the other one is water and the environment. What will happen with water rights, with the regulation of climate change? I think those will be very, very important. It's important also to note that the convention, very high in approval at the beginning, has been sort of losing approval a little bit week by week.
Why?
I would say that for two reasons. One is that there were a lot of expectations on the convention, right? Following the convention, it's hard to do. It's hard to do because there's a lot going on, there's a lot of debate going on, and it's difficult to follow. And I would say that over the last few days, some issues have been known that can sort of change public perception. But I really hope that it works out. It's very, very important for the convention to work out because, as I mentioned before, many crucial definitions for the economy, for the role of the state, for the role of the market will take place there. And the next president, whomever we choose, will have to manage the end referendum that will take place around September of next year and the transition to the new constitution. So who will the next president of Chile be? It's very, very important, not only because it's always important, the presidential election, but also because where Chile is at now, it's a definition for the next 3 or 4 decades.
And, you know, Isabel, as we move to a conclusion here, I mean, this whole process that you're describing, it sounds so chaotic, unpredictable, bewildering in some ways, and yet, as an observer and as someone who's been following Chile for more than 20 years now, I feel somewhat optimistic about where it's headed because I, you know, going back to when this process first started at the end of 2019, I think everybody recognized the injustices and inequalities that the protesters were focused on. At the same time, we kept hearing this cliche, but it was a cliche that had some truth to it, which was this question of, can you address those inequalities and injustices while at the same time avoiding, you know, killing the goose that laid the golden egg, right? That was the phrase that everybody kept using. you know, this dynamic economic machine that did enjoy a lot of success over that 30-year period. And, you know, sitting here listening to you speak and talking about these issues that people are focused on, it doesn't sound to me like the massive status quo disruption in like the negative sense. It doesn't sound to me like we're headed towards something that basically takes away what made Chile kind of a fundamentally special and unique success story over the last 30 years or so. Do you think I'm wrong? Am I taking away the wrong message here?
No, I would say that it's hard to describe it because there's many things going on. From one day to another, the scenario can change in terms of who the candidates are, what their administrative process is, and what is the main debate. But I would say that in general, I'm cautiously optimistic, mainly because what we have seen is that everything is very institutionalized. I mean, we set up a constituent process under certain rules, and those rules have been respected so far. And for example, the 2/3 majority quorum that has been established, everything indicates that it will still be maintained. And so I would say that, yes, it's much more disorganized than what we used to have before. We also have a government that has few support, which is very important in presidential systems in general, very common in Latin America. But I would say that the general sort of rules that have been established are being followed. But in terms of results of who will win the presidential campaign, I would say it's still very open. And what are the substantive decisions that the convention will take? I would say also that we're still very open. And that makes it also interesting to follow.
For sure. For sure. Well, Isabel, you know, we're very privileged to have you as a guide to sort of, you know, help us follow this process. I'm sure we'll be back in touch again soon. Thanks so much for being our guest today on the AQ podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the America's Quarterly podcast. You can read more at americasquarterly.org. Finally, if you enjoyed the episode, please give us a review, leave us a rating, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Quarterly podcast is produced by Brendan O'Boyle and Gabrielle Cohen. America's Quarterly is an independent, not-for-profit publication of America's Society and the Council of the Americas.